The idiocy. The idiocy has returned. Paul Solitaire Ryan has now said he'll support Trump, but not campaign for him. Come again. That's like offering a $5 all-you-can-eat lobster buffet, but the crustaceans never really happen to be in stock. When will the GOP learn they will not outwit the Donald because they cannot outthink the base that propelled him to the nomination in the first place? Ryan's too clever by halves measures only make him look even more pusillanimous and scheming than before, if that's possible. And actually, after putting this together, I saw folks on the Drudge poll, half of Republican voters disapprove of Paul Ryan's performance as Speaker. And now we see being launched the public hand-wringing as to whether Trump will toe the line, keep his word, etc., and govern as a conservative. Geez, did anyone ever worry about this before, say, with John McCain or Mitt Romney? Mitt Romney invented freaking Obamacare. Did anybody worry about him then? And now Mitt Romney is checking on the taxes of Donald Trump. Mitt Romney is like as lost as they come. We're probably lucky he didn't become president. Well, Trump, being a new creation, will have a lot more room to morph, change, grow, contradict, etc. For now, he's already asking help from various experts on his policies, but you can't criticize something that doesn't exist yet, correct? Meanwhile, Hillary is in total and absolute complete free fall, yet still might be the first candidate in history to cross the line DOA, her stinking corpse carried across the threshold by super delegates into the convention as the nominee. Clinton looks weaker by the day as more and more voters tout the burn, but when she finally gets the inevitable nomination, will she beat Trump? Okay, I know you guys like lists here, so 20 reasons Hillary will not win. This is off the top of my head, by the way. I mean, it could have gone deeper into this, you know what I'm saying? But here's 20 reasons Hillary will not win. One, she's lost 2/3 of her votes from last time. Two, she has a nagging cough that has no real explanation. And she looks tired all the time. She looks like a corpse, speaking of which. Three, she screams instead of speaks to people. Four, she might get an FBI-related indictment. Five, 35% of Democrats refuse to vote for her and will cross the aisle. Six, the super feminista is described as an enabler of her husband, a world-class sexual harasser and reported rapist, which was seven. Eight, she is seen as inauthentic. Nine, the more people know her, the less they like her. Ten, she couldn't even beat an unknown black senator last time. 11, Trump has huge skills in finding weaknesses in his foes and exploiting them. 12, Benghazi and Libya. 13, she could lose swing states and even New York. Because they're even in Pennsylvania and Florida and places like that. 14, the coal industry hates her guts now. 15, Bill, the wild card, who knows what he's going to say on the national general election. 16, Huma, what in the world is going on with Huma Abedin and her? 17, her weird laugh. It sounds like a hyena that has taken a few hits of crack. 18, she's already hit her ceiling. People already know who she is, and the people that are going to support her have already decided to support her, and her ceiling is really not that high. 19, her general evil treatment of people that goes way back into the first administration. And 20, Trump is a better natural campaigner than Hillary. All right, there's your 20 reasons Hillary's going to lose. In any event, we have much electioneering before the actual election, much time to pass, including the election. So get ready for the most entertaining presidential race in history. By the way, all my money is riding on Trump, sports fans. And good morning to you. 611 Kelly is the 12th of May. And we've got some, oh, I've got a guest coming in, which I was able to arrange yesterday. James Dickens is going to be coming in. I was going to try to get a debate set up for Dickens and Mark D'Antonio. So we'll see if I know Dickens would want to do it, but we'd have to get a Mark D'Antonio in on this thing. All right. So actually, what I want to get into right now is this idea that Paul Ryan, you know, Paul Ryan is, there's something wrong with this guy, and I don't know what it is. You know, the worst thing that can happen to somebody who becomes famous is they suddenly think they're special. You know, you've got all these people in Hollywood who are trying to become the next superstar. When any one of those becomes famous, gets successful, you know, it's just always, it's a terrible thing to see people who have good fortune then fall in love with themselves and say, you know, this is inevitable. I'm an incredible person. People love me naturally. And so they begin to kind of meditate on their own greatness. And I think it happens to most of these people. It's just one of the shortcomings of being a human being is that it's hard not to fall in love with yourself, or, you know, it's an expression of humanism. You didn't get anywhere really by luck. You got somewhere because people saw you and listened to you and just couldn't help but like you because you're so brilliant and articulate and entertaining and profound, whatever you want, you know, fill in the blank there. But I think Paul Ryan is one of these people. I don't think he realizes that people barely remember him as the presidential VP last time in his losing campaign. And probably what they remember is being very quickly wiped away by his terrible attitude. For him to get up and say he's personally not going to accept Trump, he's got to think about it, just makes him seem like an idiot. The things that he's done, he's gone along with certain deals, like the trade deal, in which he didn't even bother to explain his vote. But, you know, when he came in as the speaker, this is how important this guy thinks he is. He told people, you're not going to resist me. The only way I'm coming in is if you give me your full support. Who in their right mind believes that they're right all of the time? Paul Ryan apparently does. So anyway, I think this guy could end up in a mental hospital. I mean, I really think he could end up believing he owns the universe and has the deed to it in his back pocket. But anyway, illusions of grandeur, to say the least. Here's a little clip from him with Ryan and Trump.
These are conversations we're going to have. I don't really know him. I met him once in person in 2012.
Let me ask you just one thing, and I've heard this on the media as a confirmation as to the fact that it is. I've heard some conservative analysts saying, what has the GOP done in the last 10 or 20 years that's truly conservative for these guys to hold a litmus up to Trump? I mean, it's absolutely crazy to try to get elected Mitt Romney on the idea that he's electable because he's not too conservative, which totally alienated the base. And then he's the one who created Obamacare, so he couldn't really campaign against it. So anyway, these guys are trying to hold Trump up to a standard, and you know, Trump doesn't have a track record. So they're going off of various things that he's said in the past. It's absolutely crazy what they're doing, and Paul Ryan is at the center of it, and he just seems so conceited and greedy, and he's so ambitious, and you know, he's forgetting he could be primaried out of his seat within a year. It's just so crazy. Anyway, here he's talking about Trump.
We had a very good conversation in March on the phone. We just need to get to know each other. And we, as a leadership team, are enjoying the fact that we have a chance to meet with him. So I'd rather have a conversation in person than through the media. No offense. Look, this is a big tent party. there is plenty of room for different policy disputes in this party. We come from different wings of the party. The goal here is to unify the various wings of the party around common principles so we can go forward unified. Juan.
You spoke with Ben Carson, the top Trump supporter, last night. What was Mr. Carson's message to you ahead of this meeting with Donald Trump?
First of all, Ben Carson's a great guy. And Ben Carson is just trying to provide a constructive role to help. He wants to be a force to help all the various wings of the Republican Party and the conservative movement to come together, and he's trying to play that constructive role.
Out of the meeting tomorrow, can there be merged messages or can there be separate messages, congressional subpoena message, and a nomination?
Look, we've got a process. We're just getting started. So the last thing I'm going to do is say exactly what the end of this process is going to be when we're just beginning this process. The point I'll just make one more time is I really believe that if we're going to be successful this fall, we have to unify our party. We have to go forward with a positive message that Americans see that we have solutions to their problems. When 7 out of 10 Americans don't like the path that this country is on, and Hillary Clinton is basically promising to keep going down the same path, we have an obligation to merge and to unify around our common principles to offer this country a choice, a better way forward. And that's going to take some party unification to do that. We just finished probably one of the most grueling primaries in modern history. It's going to take some work, and that's the kind of work we're dedicated to doing.
Opioids.
So there you see the Speaker of the House.
All right, so he just walked off the stage there, but I just have a problem with this guy. I think Paul Ryan is part of the reason that we're in the place that we're in right now. An individual who just, if he's not in love with himself, he's doing a spectacular job of imitating it. And, I'm so discouraged to listen to this guy. He's just, what is so special about Paul Ryan? I realized that he was the vice president. He's a handsome guy, I guess, blue eyes and everything, but he's been elected and reelected or whatever, but I just don't really see any things that is that special. Certainly the way he's conducted himself since getting into office as the speaker has just been abysmal. Here is a little bit from his challenger. They're trying to primary him, and Sarah Palin is trying to be part of this primary process. Well, let's take a little break here, and I'll come back and play his thing for you. Paul Ryan has some profound problems, but the main problem that I have with him right now, I mean, other than the fact that he's a very moderate guy, he's middle of the road, is that he thinks that he's the personal gate that Donald Trump has to go through, and he needs to just hope and pray that Donald Trump doesn't just jump over the fence and leave him behind, because Paul Ryan is not the center of the party. He's not the leader of the party. He's not the most important person there. He doesn't have the intellect to be a gatekeeper, my friends. That's just my impression. 620, Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523, 1450. And I do have the text machine, 805-6180. We'll be back. A little more Eva Cassidy for you. Songbird. All right, I got a couple of clips here on Paul Nehlen. It's a little bit hard to hear this, so I'm going to have to transfer over to another clip, but I'll just give you a little background on this. There is a Dump Paul Ryan movement, and it's being led by this guy, Paul Nehlen, who I think is basically kind of a multimillionaire in his district in Illinois. Check this, Wisconsin. Check this out.
Donald Trump was asked about Palin's push to turn voters against Paul Ryan. Here's what he said.
I have nothing to do with that. I mean, that's her. You know, Sarah is very much a free agent. She's a terrific person, but she's very much a free agent. And I didn't know about this until yesterday. I guess she's been fighting or she's endorsing somebody that's running against Paul Ryan. And I didn't know about it until yesterday when I read about it.
I'm joined now by Paul Neelan, the candidate for Congress. He's running against Speaker Ryan in Wisconsin's 1st Congressional District. He joins us on the phone from El Paso. We're getting a closer look at what's happening along the border with Mexico. Appreciate you taking some time for us today. Thanks for being with us. Oh, we may be having a little bit of a rough connection. Hopefully it's going to clear up a little bit for us. When we look at this race, based on our research, there's not a lot of fundraising happening on your end. Basically zero. Paul Ryan has about $7 million in cash on hand. How do you run a race against him without any money? And has this endorsement from Sarah Palin brought in any donations for you?
I would suggest otherwise. I mean, I'm not going to file a campaign. I think it's July.
He basically says, though, who is Paul Ryan to lecture anybody on being a conservative and bringing the movement together, that Paul Ryan is the problem. He's not the answer. I couldn't agree more. I think it is a terrible thing when you look at Paul Ryan, the way he's conducted himself. It's not just an embarrassment. It's embarrassing to see people hold themselves up as being more important than the process. Is historically, are we supposed to go up and carve his face onto Mount Rushmore now or something? It is terrible to see someone like that, because what it tells you is that the person is not in touch with realities they should be. And Paul Ryan should have never been put into that position. Somebody who knew him should have come along and said, you know, to whoever's trying to run the thing, don't put this guy in there. He doesn't have the temperament. And maybe they didn't know that, but here is, I just want to give you a little bit of background on this guy. Here is Paul Neelan talking about Ryan betraying us on TPA, TPP, these important international trade things that Paul Ryan voted for and didn't even bother to bring in the opinion of other people. Paul Ryan is, in my opinion, a liberal. Check this out from Paul Neelan.
I'm running is because Paul Ryan freaking lied to us. He lied to me. And he's betrayed all of us. When Paul Ryan said, I'm going to go to Washington and I'm going to absolutely do these things on behalf of the first district. He lied to us. 83% of Paul Ryan's campaign financing came from outside our district. And of that 83%, 65% of Paul Ryan's campaign contributions came from his special interest buddies in DC and Alexandria, Virginia. It explains his votes. Paul Ryan decided to be the champion of this district leveling trade deal known as Trans-Pacific Partnership. It's going to export jobs overseas, and equally bad or even worse, it's going to import workers to replace us in our own jobs. 5,500 pages? No, I haven't read 5,500 pages. Paul Ryan hasn't read 5,500 pages. Those guys in D.C. haven't read 5,500 pages. And yet, he's its biggest champion. It was prepared in secret. We didn't have a copy of it. So what, we got to pass it before we get to read it? Americans should have the opportunity to read everything before it's passed. There shouldn't be anything that our elected representatives pass we don't have the opportunity to read. They're our representatives. They're not demigods. They're not somebody who gets to go there and decide, we know better than you do.
Paul Ryan is a demigod. He needs to be thrown out on his ear. He does have big ears. All right, so we'll take a little break here and come back and talk to James Dickens about his campaign. And it is 6:29 a.m. Las Cruces, 1450 KOB, Kelly O'Connell Show, 523-1450 to call in, and 805-6180. I'll have a little bit more on Paul Neelan when we come back, maybe a good little interview so you can hear him back and forth. But we'll be right back to find out about the Dickens campaign against Mark D'Antonio. We'll be right back. And it's 60 degrees outside. Mm-hmm. All right, 6:33, and anyway, we've got some races going on locally that are heating up, and got the gentleman who received the Las Cruces Sun News thumbs up for the district attorney's race, James Dickens here. And good morning, James. How's it going?
It's doing great. I appreciate the opportunity to come on your show and talk to you and talk to your audience.
Okay. So, what's going on? Tell us, fill us in what's happened since you were here last, which was, I don't know, maybe a month ago.
Yeah. I was going to say mostly what I've been focusing on obviously is getting out into the community, talking to the voters, introducing myself, as a lifelong prosecutor. I'm not somebody who's, well known by name. I've never run for office before. So it's been grueling to get out there, but also very rewarding to see the support in the community. I, as you just mentioned, was endorsed by the Las Cruces Sun News. Also, I've received endorsements from the Las Cruces Police Officers Association, as well as the Doña Ana County Sheriff's. So the men and women on the street, the first responders, know of me, know of my dedication, chosen to support. And that's been very gratifying.
All right. So what do you know what it was that was maybe behind their decision to support you?
Well, I don't want to speak for them. The endorsements spoke of their confidence in my skills, confidence in my dedication as a prosecutor. Certainly when I went to talk to them, I talked about how I love to be a voice for the victims in the courtroom. I love to work with the officers to make sure our cases are absolutely as strong as possible in order to get the best results each and every time.
And were you thinking of some cases that were not in strong, in your opinion, that you're referring to in your mind?
Not so much cases. I don't like to necessarily cherry pick a case here or there. What I was thinking about was all the officers that even before I ran, decided to run for office, reached out to me and indicated that there was just a lack of communication going on between the office of the district attorney as well as the officers on the street. Their cases were being declined or dismissed, and they just didn't understand why, and there was a lack of communication. In my experience, officers are more than willing to change what they're doing, change their approach, do more research, do more investigation if asked to do so. So I was surprised to hear that there just wasn't that type of communication going on.
So there's no particular case that you would take issue with? There's no – I mean, that strikes me as absurd, and – also, probably frustrating that people are not going to hear your particular criticism and just say in generally.
Okay. Well, let's talk about.
Well, people want to know, you know, the average person doesn't have a lot of the sophistication in terms of legal procedure and
right.
and going forward. The average person does like a nice debate, though.
Certainly. Well, and last time we were here, you offered to set up a debate, and I'm certainly willing to do that.
Well,
he
said that he wanted to do it. He said not right away, that he was busy, but that he does want to get together.
Okay,
and so we'll do it on the air, and maybe you know, we can decide ahead of time what the questions will be or whatever, so that people will come in, you know, feeling that they'll get a chance to say what, you know, talk on what they want.
Certainly. If you want a case in particular, let's take the case where Mr. D'Antonio, as well as I think his chief deputy, Mr. Rubino, tried, I think her name is Fushini, for a murder case. That was a case, if you remember, where the allegation was or the evidence was that she had a fight with her fiance, basically kicks him out of the truck, and within a few seconds of kicking him out of the truck, she puts the truck in gear, jumps the curb, runs him over, and kills him.
Yeah, that wasn't the bad part. It was backing up over him again and then peeling out.
Well, my issue with the presentation of the case and the direction of the case was the charges they brought obviously were first-degree murder, which requires the state to prove that the defendant intended to do the acts but truly thought through the process.
Not a crime of passion, in other words.
Exactly. Not just a quick instant thought, but a crime that they really thought through. But they also charged her with DWI. So
it's a mitigating factor.
Exactly. So you're basically arguing to the jury two different fact patterns. So
a fact pattern is a fancy legal statement that you learn that you learn in law school when you're trying to pass law exams.
That's right. So issues like that, I just don't understand how you would go forward with a theory that contradicts itself. So here's an example.
Let me ask this: where we were. I'm trying to remember if you talked about I believe that you talked about the percentage of that you were doing some percentage analysis on cases and such. And if you could go back over that again in terms of, you know, what's the standard in the state or.
Certainly. So looking at the standard in the state, I'd say between your declines, dismissals, acquittals, the state average is running about, you know, teens, high teens to low 20s. So that would be what would be the standard.
For what?
For cases, your top count of each case that comes into the office is being declined. In other words, they look at it initially and they decide it's not a case they're
going to
take.
Okay, so 20% of the cases that get offered to the DA would be turned away.
Or dismissed by the court or acquitted. So all three of those are, categories are put together.
Okay.
The current administration here in Doñana County is shooting closer to 46 to 48%.
Now, that's 2.5 times the average.
That's right. And that's one of the things I spoke to when we...
That's 50% almost.
Almost 50%. And that's what we spoke to with the editorial board when Mr. D'Antonio and I were interviewed. And part of what they put in the paper is their concerns over the way the office is currently being managed.
All right. So in a general understanding of what you think is happening as opposed to what's happening in the rest of the state, how do you... explain, or how would you understand what's going on, that 50% of the cases here are not really being successful, whereas it's like 20% elsewhere?
I think what we're looking at here generally is inexperience. A state prosecutor has to have the ability to work with their officers to make the cases better as they come in, to talk to the officers even beforehand, to sit and talk to the victims and witnesses and make them better. But if you don't have that experience, I've been doing it for 16 years, over 200 trials. I think it quickly becomes a plea mill where all you see are the problems, the concerns you have, and it's so much safer to simply offer a plea, get what you can, and get out of the case. And the victims' voices are not being heard in our community.
So just going after low-hanging fruit, in your opinion?
That's right.
And so when you say lack of experience, who's got the lack of experience? Is it Mark? Is it the office? Is it the officers?
Well, Mr. D'Antonio has a wonderful resume, and I applaud him for his service on the federal level, but very little state court experience. In federal court and state court are different beasts completely. But he's also had an extreme difficulty in maintaining his staffing. He has a lot of turnover. I'm not just talking about at turn of the administration. But even since then, he's gone through, I think my last count was six chief deputies. So there's a lot of turnover in the office, and that sort of creates an environment where you're constantly passing files back and forth, and you never really become comfortable with your files, with your officers. In your case.
Okay, so is it possible his standards are too high, that these people are not, maybe there's not a lot of quality pool out there to draw from?
I don't think I can answer that question. I don't know why people left the office. I imagine there's a myriad of reasons why people leave the office. But again, NDA's offices routinely lose people because it is a position where people come in, they get some experience, and they leave.
And become millionaires.
Well, that's always the dream, I'm sure. But the turnover here, especially at the top level, I don't understand how he can explain how he's gone through, again, six chief deputies in less than 3 years.
Well, Paul Rubino's not there anymore.
Paul Rubino's gone. Pete Pineda's gone. There's Nick Gutierrez is gone. There's a lot of them.
Okay. All right. Well, I happen to know a fair number of people over in the office. It seems like a fine staff. 642 Kelly O'Connell AM, Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450. If you have a question or a statement for James Dickens or about Mark D'Antonio and this race, and 805-6180 is the text. We will be back with James Dickens, he's going to have to jump in the car. He's currently working in Alamogordo, and we'll be right back.
And the songbird keeps singing like this. Know the score. Like never before.
And we're here with James Dickens. He's running for district attorney, and he's currently employed in Alamogordo as a chief prosecutor. But are you the number two or the assistant? Or
no, my rank is deputy district attorney.
Okay.
Currently, our chief deputy is Scott Key. So
okay, and I know Scott Key. He's a superb litigator.
He's a legend.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, that was my nickname for him.
That's right.
The legend. So let me ask you this. There was one thing that Walt Rubel had mentioned, that Mark had gotten mad during the Sun News conversation that he had with you guys, and that Mark had gotten up and left angry. But then that Walt said, I can't remember what he ended up saying about it, but do you have any memory of that?
The only thing I actually said after Mr. D'Antonio left the interview so abruptly was Walt simply saying, well, I guess the interview is over. And that was the end of the conversation. I didn't attempt to continue to talk to them. I didn't think that'd be appropriate since Mr. D'Antonio had left the room. I believe mm-hmm. I did the video that's on their website and ended the interview myself.
Ex parte communication with the Sun News.
That's right. No, they did a great job in attempting to be as impartial as possible. They really, four of those people could certainly play poker. They didn't show any facial expressions. They maintained the decorum very well during the interview. So.
Okay. So now, did you have anything? Were there any other? Besides the case where the woman went and ran. I mean, I think what was remarkable about that case, didn't she run that guy over in front of a bunch of kids?
Yeah, I remember there was one witness that came forward that was the police really relied upon. She was very descriptive in talking about the engine revving, talking about jumping the curb. Even after jumping the curb, there was a turning of the wheel. And so her description of it made it very obvious that there was some intent going on.
And what was the charge? What was the judgment or the, you know?
I remember correctly, it was involuntary manslaughter. So and a DWI. So
it was like 18 months, was it?
That's right. So the end result was 18 months or no, 3.5 years was the sentence on that case.
But she's out.
Yes.
I think so, yeah.
I think she's out because none of that's a serious violent offense, so that would be half time.
Yeah, and I believe she's available.
Well, okay.
She's back in the dating pool. But, all right, so any of the – I know you got to be going in a few minutes. James is only here for half of an hour, but any other cases or
– You know what? I think the other thing that was surprising was pulling the murder cases. Again, I tried to only – look at the cases that were charged under Mr. D'Antonio. I don't expect him to accept the cases that were charged under the prior administration, but really just look at the cases that were charged under him. So charged under Mr. D'Antonio and resolved as of today, there were 10 first-degree murder cases. Of those 10, only one has resulted in a conviction for first-degree murder. The remaining 9 were dismissed or pled to lesser charges. So, again, we're looking at the most serious cases, the cases that the whole office needs to be focused upon, the cases where somebody has chosen to take a human life, that has chosen to do something that our law says is the most heinous crime out there, and we're getting one out of 10 convictions as charged.
10%.
10%.
Wasn't that recent, the conviction?
Yes. It was just this month
week,
of May.
Yeah, a week or two ago. Okay, so I guess, coming up into this last month, there was 0% convictions, but they've radically upped their average. Let's take one last break here, and we will come back and see the concluding thoughts of James. 650 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOB Kelly, go to 523-1450. And 805-618-02, text in and call in if you have any comments or questions. We'll be right back.
These are the hands that drive commerce.
6:53. It's the 12th. It's about 60 degrees outside. Pretty nice weather. We've got James Dickens here, and so James, what's your contact info?
Anybody can reach me by emailing Dickens4DA, and that's the letter four, Dickens4DA@gmail.com, or they can certainly call me on my personal cell, which is 575-642-7300. Again, 642-7300.
Okay, and what do you, so if you're going to kind of compare yourself to the current administration against Mark D'Antoni, what are the differences between you and Mark?
It's state experience in this path. I've done this job for 16 years in the DA's office. I've worked my way up from the very bottom, doing the misdemeanor cases, all the way up to doing the most violent felonies, and done everything along the way. Domestic violence, white collar, drug prosecutions, often to the violent cases. So a lot of experience, and therefore I feel like I can get the very best out of each case because I know what each case needs. Also looking at it is experience dealing with witnesses and victims. Unless you have been there and done that, you don't necessarily know how to react if your witness starts going south on the stand or says something that you weren't expecting. How to prep a witness, how to give the witness just the strength to go through with it, because whether they're the victim or just a witness, nobody likes going to court.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody likes going through this process. Finally, is sitting with hundreds of victims throughout these years. Meet with those victims and, again, know how to come alongside them, give them the strength to go forward. These victims want to know that somebody, first and foremost, will listen to them. Second, they want to know that somebody believes them, because all too often their family and friends are split. Their family and friends are one-sided versus the other-sided, and so they need somebody who believes in them. And then finally, they need somebody who's going to be the advocate for them, who's going to fight for them. And so I've been doing that for 16 years. And I know that I can encourage the rest of the office, mentor the rest of the office, and guide the rest of the office to being the very best that they can be.
So what kind of feedback are you getting from people as you're going around? I understand you guys are walking a lot.
Right.
And what are people saying?
The feedback has been very encouraging. Of course, at the beginning, it was feedback was, Mr. Dickens, we don't know you, but we're not satisfied with what we see in the paper. We're not satisfied with what our friends are telling us. We're not satisfied with what law enforcement is telling us. But tell us more about you. That started to change here now. And the feedback we're getting is, you know, that they know me, that they're getting comfortable with me. And so it's turning from, we're just not supporting Mark, to supporting you. And that's been very encouraging this last month, to see that swing and to know that the community is becoming more comfortable and in fact, encouraging about my run for office.
And when is the next time you guys are going to be having a debate or in public?
Right. The next one I know of is a candidates forum being put on at the Temple Beth El. That's going to be May 17th. That's next Tuesday, starting at 6:30. And it's going to have all of the contested races, I believe, here in Doñana County. So that's a good opportunity to get out, get a firsthand look at all the people that are running for office and see who you can get behind and support. And I really encourage it, because nothing's more disheartening than having people, you know, cast their votes who really don't know anything about the candidates they're voting for.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, thanks for coming on, James. I know you got to rush out to Alamogordo, but we'll have you back on again before the election. We'll have a debate between you and Mark.
Sounds great. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot. All right, folks. James Dickens running for DA, and that race is coming up here pretty tightly, and it's a primary. So two Democrats, and anyway, we're coming up on 6:58. News for you. Brazil, the government has fallen, and they tried to impeach the president, and then somebody came in at the last minute and put in paperwork to stop the impeachment. But apparently the government in Brazil has fallen, and leftism is always in chaos. Don't forget that. Everywhere you study leftism, it's promises unfulfilled and cratering economies and people who are acting in a very entitled manner. Caitlyn Jenner experiencing sex change regret might detransition. I guess it's not so easy to be a woman after all. And he did look a little bit wobbly on those high heels, you know. And apparently if he's using his medical marijuana, the same one that caused him to get into a wreck, and trying to use high heels, maybe he's got vertigo. But, you know, they have found these people that get the sex changes have more than a 40% sex change, or 40% suicide attempt. So it does not solve problems. Generally speaking, one of the reasons you should be careful to push somebody in that direction, very high substance abuse rates, institutionalization, mental health issues. 6:59, and we'll be right back. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450, and 805-6180, Kelly O'Connell. Thank you. Well, just had James Dickens on running for district attorney, and I'm sure that Mark is going to want to come on here pretty soon. And trying to get all the candidates on here. If anybody knows of a candidate, have them call me, 805, my office number, 575-805-1245, I believe. I should probably check my card on that. Isn't it funny you don't even know your own number? But I believe it's 805-1245. All right, so we've got a transition in Brazil. Brazil, one of the largest democracies in the world. And in that country, they had leftism for a long time. Now, the problem with leftism is when you run out of ways to get cheap money, then all bets are off. And so Brazil's incredible growth has come out of, to a large extent, the oil industry, the oil sector. And with prices plummeting, it puts a lot of pressure. Brazil's Rousseff, who's a female, Dilma Rousseff, is set to resign after the Senate votes to put her on trial. And so she's been suspended for breaking budget rules and other things, corruption, that type of thing. So she's out. And so, but anyway, so I don't, you know, I guess that kind of stuff doesn't really affect America because we are the, you know, it should be illegal. Socialism should be illegal because it's been proven that it doesn't work. And it is a threat to democracy. You cannot have a socialist country, a fully socialist country with a the democracy and socialism don't go together. Democracy, republicanism, and capitalism go together. If you have a socialist country where the government is over the economy, then you don't have free elections at the same time. Those two things just don't occur together. Caitlyn Jenner experienced sex change. Regret might be transition. And it hasn't been easy for him. He still has his plumbing. So according to this debate in North Carolina, the issue is whether, is he a man or a woman? He's definitely a tranny. The question is, and here's the thing. I mean, I'm sure most people would look at Caitlyn Jenner, the former Bruce Jenner, and say that he should be able to use the female bathroom. But honestly, I don't care. Except I think that people do have a right to privacy, and having all men in an area where there is, you know, it's a bathroom or it's a sports, you know, you're in a locker room or whatever. And also for females, I think females want even more than men. They want privacy so that they can get about their business. And so, all right. So, Ian Halperin, who wrote the Kardashian Dynasty, has said that Jenner was thrilled to be able to champion transitional issues, sex change issues. He says it hasn't been easy for Caitlyn. It's been very hard. Quote, she's thrilled she has raised awareness about how transgender people have long been discriminated against. There's a chance she'll detransition in the next couple of years. So she's still into women and wants to meet the right one. Whereas they had put out in the media that, that he was looking to meet. I don't know. I mean, you know, here's the thing. There's so many issues that if you bring them out into the light, they're really disturbing. And I don't think, I mean, the main issue is probably they don't really help society and they don't help the individual. How does getting a sex change help somebody? And I'm just kind of launching into this right here. I wasn't planning on it. I didn't see that there was going to be this story here last night. It wasn't in the news, but these people that get these sex changes, it doesn't solve their problems. And this is what I wish people would get into their minds. Dealing with, you know, this is what we were talking about yesterday. The elites want change because change of this type distracts people from what's really going on. The economy is failing. Obama's economy has failed, per se. It's never reached 3%. You have to have 3% economic growth, GDP, to create and replace jobs. We've never, ever, he's never gotten up to 3% on a sustained basis. And I believe that Ronald Reagan almost got up to 8% before he left office. His economic ideas were so powerful. Obama has stood up for this type of thing, for this idea that there's this whole world of people and opinions that have been held down by America, that have been held down by the West. And, you know, so he has celebrated or championed all kinds of different things. And this stuff is a failure because here's the real truth. And I just was reading a biography of Ernest Hemingway last night, if you can believe it, who was dealing with the same type of thing that you're not going to believe this, Bruce Jenner was dealing with as a kid. Bruce Jenner was cross-dressing as a kid. And I think that's really the issue here. When Ernest Hemingway, who was known to be the most macho, the most masculine, you know, he did all these things. He shot lions and he was a war reporter, and he was in raging battles, and he was, you know, he was off the coast of Cuba getting these giant fish in the boat and everything. When he was raised, he had a sister who was just, I don't know how old she was, next to him, 10 months difference. I think Ernest Hemingway's problem, his dad was a passive individual. His dad was a doctor. He was an obstetrician, delivered something like 10,000 babies. He was also a very depressive person. The mother in the family was the person that called the shots. And for his whole life, Ernest Hemingway called her that biatch because he felt like that she was castrating the father. The father committed suicide. Ernest Hemingway committed suicide. Two of Ernest Hemingway's sons committed suicide. Ernest Hemingway's grandfather, I think, committed suicide, and his granddaughter did. I mean, it's just like the craziest family, and alcohol and suicide. But, you know, when Ernest Hemingway was being raised, his mother dressed him as a girl up to the age of 6, I believe, so that he would look exactly like his sister, and called him by a female name and everything. And it really bothered him his whole life that she had done that, and he couldn't stand her. And so basically he hated his mom for what she did to his father, but also for what she did to him. And he spent it basically, if you understood, and I've got a summary that was written by a psychiatrist who had studied Ernest Hemingway's life. And I, as a matter of fact, I've got it. I can bring it up and read you his psychological profile. It's a very sick individual, but tremendously talented and maybe the great writer of his generation. But he was bedeviled by the same thing that Bruce Jenner was. You know, you fiddle with someone's gender identity as a child, it doesn't bring them happiness. And even if they cross-dress or transition, my point here is that these people should have a certain level of sympathy from us and compassion, but that shouldn't move in the direction of encouraging them to get a sex change, because, you know, it makes it worse. And these people struggle with mental health and all kinds. So anyway, that's my point. We'll take a break here and come back. And I've got this. I remember seeing this video called Sex Change Regret, a guy that had a sex change. Let me just play a little bit of that before we move into another direction. 716 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450 and 805-6180 to text. We will be right back. ¶¶ All right, so I have been watching the weather nationally, and I've got a clip here for you. But there was a clip I saw yesterday from Kentucky, and it was they were watching a tornado that was coming towards a parking lot, and they were like, "Oh my God, can you? It's turning around. Look at that! Oh my, is that a car in the air?" Is that that house is in pieces? So I don't want to torture you with that, but here's a little bit from the Weather Channel on severe thunderstorms, flash flooding, targeting the nation's south and Midwest again. And just to let you know also that there's going to be a cooling pattern that goes across the United States. But here's from Weather Channel.
Quite a hail show coming down in St. Louis, Missouri yesterday. We had basically all sizes of hail from quarter size all the way up to what you see there. I would say that would be right around tennis ball size, but they even had reports of grapefruit size hail. Now, more severe weather is on the way today, and we're going to see this right through the middle part of the country. So Cleveland all the way down to Memphis, yeah, you're in tap for severe weather. Today is going to be another day where basically as this front swings through, the main threat is going to be hail and wind. By the way, in Kentucky yesterday, we had some wind gusts as high as 60 miles per hour. Now, that front is going to move off to the east by Friday, so we will have an isolated threat of severe weather right along the coast, from the northeast all the way down to the southeast.
And right along that eastern seaboard is where that weather's going to end up pounding, but there's some pretty heavy rains and storms coming through Arkansas and into Missouri and Illinois and such. So just to let you know, okay. And so here, all right, so here is this guy. I got this, I bought his, I guess it was a Kindle book on the sex change thing, because this is entering into the media cycle. And I was surprised to find out that, okay. So generally speaking, I think that if we had an unbiased media and a scientific society, like everybody, like all the liberals brag and all the conservatives know isn't really true, you would realize that you've got a psychological problem, which is an issue with gender identity or how a person sees themselves. And the answer, the obvious answer, is to get psychological help. But instead, there's this very corrupt part of the medical industry that is trying to take advantage of these poor souls who are very tormented. And they get these sex changes. And if you can imagine, you know, you're getting parts of your body that you were born with that are with certain designs for reproduction and pleasure and health. And you're you're cutting them off, you're reconfiguring people. Medically speaking, it is a lot of these, especially female to male transitions, they've never figured out how to create a male organ. And on top of that, male to female, it's not a successful operation. It's got something like a 50 or 60% failure rate because 40% of the people try to kill themselves. Another 10% refuse to